This month at PostWrestlingCafe.com, go XL and you get live editions of Rewind to Raw, Rewind to Dynamite, and Rewind to SmackDown, featuring all the news of the day, your questions and answers, as well as feedback. PostWrestlingCafe.com. $6 gets you in the door.
Rewind the Dynamite from the post-wrestling site. AEW lighting up the fuse. Sit back and enjoy the bubbly. As we hear from John and Waitay, where we're going, we don't need roads. And if the buck stops here, this thing might blow. Everything you hear, opinions of the show. And if you don't like it, go to the Forbes and let them know.
We are going to be getting into Dynamite. Welcome one, welcome all for the show tonight. Way, it is the eve of Survivor Series 1991 on Rewind Away. Thursday, it drops, the Thanksgiving Eve tradition. We are going back some 34 years. It was Detroit, Michigan, the Joe Louis Arena, The Undertaker walking into the ring against Hulk Hogan. It would be a very heated Joe Louis Arena, so hot that the tombstone pile driver may not be executed to perfection. We will go down and assess from all sides what happened during this errant, or was it, tombstone spot involving The Undertaker and Terry Jean Bollea.
Would you say this is the among the first Survivor Series controversies?
Yes. If we're not going to include the first show where they put the ultimatum on all the pay-per-view carriers to mess with Starrcade.
There are a lot of them, but Survivor Series 1991, maybe most well-remembered for this particular spot where The Undertaker delivers a tombstone piledriver to Hulk Hogan, which, of course, results in, spoiler alert, The Undertaker's first championship win. But I guess years of controversy stemming from this, you could say, incident where Hulk Hogan claims that he was spiked on his head. Did he claim paralysis of some sort?
That he lost feeling in his traps, in his calves, that he was greatly damaged from this for years. And then it all comes to a head in 2014 when he is deposed in his lawsuit with the Laser Spine Institute. And those lawyers, they did their homework and they were going to put Hulk Hogan and depose him about the Survivor Series 1991.
Oh, very exciting. Well, we will have our own investigation, okay, into whether or not contact truly was made and Hulk Hogan's spine was, in fact, damaged from this rather safe-looking tombstone pile driver.
Yes. I'm sure Jack Tunney may have wanted to rule about whether chairs should be banned from ringside, but we also have an angle that resulted in reptiles being banned from ringside because the Survivor Series followed the major angle from television where Jake the Snake Roberts and his trusty King Cobra tried to gnaw off the arm of Randy Savage. Was this snake devenomized? A classic angle that led to both men still appearing physically at the Survivor Series, but banned from competing on the show because we had another pay-per-view to sell 6 days later.
I imagine this singular image of this King Cobra gnawing on the bicep of Randy Savage still exists in many, many adults' minds.
Amazing.
At this point. It is really iconic and not technically a part of the show, but it is a part of a recap and an extensive one at that. And for that reason, we have an excuse to discuss it at length. So we'll be talking about that tomorrow as well.
All that plus the Rockers are... They were not having a pleasant Thanksgiving that particular week. Ric Flair's first WWF pay-per-view. So much more. That will be covered on the 1991 Survivor Series Rewind Away, dropping on Thursday. And a note that this coming Friday, Neil Flanagan will join Waiting for Rewind to SmackDown. I will be doing a review of a Final Resolution, which will be out Saturday. And then we will also have a Collision Course with Kate from Montreal and Wei Ting. And I'm sure there will be some recap of Final Battle on that show. Collision is going to be live that night from Columbus, Ohio. And then we will also have Sunday, a UFC 323 review with Eric Marcotte and Jack Wannon. All that and much more coming up in a very busy weekend at Post Wrestling, as every company is running some type of show.
Very busy December in Post Wrestling.
It is very busy, and it's going to get busier, folks, because if you go right now to the forum, forum.postwrestling.com, there, pinned at the top, submissions are now open. It is time for the annual Christmas Jingle Contest. Oh. We are giving you plenty of lead time. You have a deadline of Monday, December the 22nd, to submit your jingles. We ask you to limit them to 2 minutes max. We appreciate copyright-free music, especially Waiting. It's not mandatory, but you do need to provide some original work when it comes to your Christmas jingle. And amuse us, entertain us. That is the goal of the jingle contest every year. And as we say every single year, if we don't get responses, this will be the last year of the jingle contest.
Yes, that could be. It's always at risk. I feel like this year we have to be a lot more conscious of AI infiltrating our Christmas jingle contest.
Well, we will see. Like, you can try and get it by us, but if we sniff AI, can we assume it is that an automatic negative if you use AI in your submission? Or
I guess if it's so blatantly obvious.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, if we smell it and it's not enhancing your jingle, it will be a mark against you. So AI at your own risk.
Sure. Mm-hmm.
Or as Linda McMahon would say, A1. So there you go, forum.postwrestling.com. That's where you can submit your jingles, and you have until December the 22nd, and they will all be played on the annual Christmas show. Wayne and I were in deep negotiations last year. We have signed on to do the Christmas show for this year. We will put out the annual show.
Yeah, it's a tradition that we simply cannot get out of at this point. So how long will it be? Well, you will find out, okay? No matter what, no matter who you're celebrating with, you will have plenty of us to listen to on the day. Just one final note here. It's that time of year. It is the end of the year, and that means for a lot of you guys, you are getting your Spotify Wrapped recaps. Ooh. And that means we're starting to see a lot of these people that have been listening to a lot of post-wrestling over the past year showing us just the numerous hours of us talking to you. It always warms our heart to know that people are listening to these shows and not just listening, but listening to us a lot. So keep them coming. Continue to tag us in all of our social media platforms. And of course, we will always retweet whenever possible. It means a lot to us. You know, we're despite maybe, I don't know, like some of these results, I kind of feel like we're still like a relatively small podcast network. So any of this sort of like added sharing and publicity always helps us out. So thank you for that.
On to Dynamite we go from Fishers, Indiana at the Fishers Event Center. 3,380 tickets distributed from WrestleTix. They did run the same building exactly a year ago where they drew 3,096. So a slight uptick this year, about 300 more. And we're starting with the face-to-face between Samoa Joe and Eddie Kingston. Everyone is banned from ringside.
Mm-hmm.
Can't have any run-ins during the face-to-face. So Joe explains he's in his t-shirt and pants. You may wonder why I'm not wearing a three-piece suit, because this morning when I got on to my flight, I was told I'm going to Indiana and wearing and it would be like wearing a tuxedo to a petting zoo, calling the people of Indiana dumb animals. And Hook has grown up with a championship legacy, and he sent Hook to team with Kingston to see what it's like to eat with the losers. Eddie is someone who never crossed the finish line or realized their potential. I know what's going to happen next week, Eddie. You're going to fight your ass off, but you won't cross the finish line, just like every other time, and I'm going to choke you out. So Kingston takes this all in. He says, Joe, you were the guy that saved the independents, the greatest ROH title reign ever, and then you sold your soul. Hook learned perseverance from me. And you know what? I might be a hothead, but I get shit done when I'm a hothead. I don't know or respect this version of you. The old version of Joe would have run through everyone. He was a real champion, and you've become the old guy that you used to call out. And if you don't bring the previous version of Samoa Joe, the one that beat up my mentor Homicide all these years, well, if you don't bring that version, I'm going to eat you alive next week. And off he goes. Kingston wanted to go to sleep in his hotel room, and this dude was probably asleep by 9:30.
you know, you get up there in age and suddenly sleep seems like the most attractive thing. You can
I get
do
it. I get evening. It, man. Totally get a good night's sleep, man. And then just get on that flight home.
It's life in your 40s. So you know, I thought this was a very good, albeit like kind of shorter segment than I think I was expecting. Like I wanted a little bit more back and forth from these two, just seeing as how this is such a dream pairing on the microphone, in my opinion. But I, you know, like I'm happy with what we got. Joe gave us some explanation for the Hook turn here, and it's that he wanted Hook to feel what it was like to live with a second placer for a little bit in Eddie Kingston. And at this point, like, I still have my, you know, issues with, I think, just like the lack of importance that I think like the Hook Kingston pairing felt throughout its run, to the point where like the turn itself I thought wasn't that well received. But as an explanation, like now a week after the fact, fine. It works, okay? It's okay. Like, he sent Hook out on this mission to just live with the loser for a few months, and now he's come back. All right, fine. Good enough. Don't know if I still buy that.
Are we led to believe that Joe assumed he could beat Hangman at WrestleDream on his own?
Yeah.
And then when he lost that match, that's when he had to use the Hook option.
Perhaps.
Maybe. He didn't need Hook at WrestleDream. He was like, no, keep teaming with him. You're the backup plan in case all goes to shit. I'll get a rematch. I know I can secure a rematch.
Yeah.
And we'll get it in a cage.
Yeah, yeah. You know what? Maybe that'll come out in another promo. It's all part of the plan. Yeah.
All right.
I thought Eddie, like, you know, like, as always, like, hearing Eddie on a live show just with a microphone, I think it's always a spectacle. You know, he in this scenario felt very off the top of his head, very good, very spirited. Not, in my opinion, not as maybe not as great of a promo as the one he cut on Saturday, which I think was a lot more vulnerable. Would have liked to have seen him get into like his mental state a little bit more here, and what this match and winning this championship in particular means to him. So that's why I kind of was hoping for a little bit more of a fleshed out back and forth between them, but still a very good overall segment.
Hook was with Hobbs and Shibata backstage, and they've got the trios belts, and they have business to take care of tonight. They're going to give Dark Order a non-title match, and then if they win, they can get the title match. So I'm assuming that these trios belts, they're all just interchangeable among the ops.
That was my assumption too. Now, if you remember, like Hook, wasn't Hook initially a champion, or was he not? Am I mistaken? Did they win the championships with Hook?
I don't think so.
No? Okay. Well, whatever. Like, the Freebird rule is a thing. Can we look this up?
Brian, I'm looking it up, and I'm
Brian. Do your job.
Joe,
okay?
Hobbs and Shibata won the titles by themselves.
Okay.
April, they won these belts from the Death Riders, who had them forever.
Dude, whatever. Joe is a champion. He's kind of busy. Throw Hook in there. I'm okay with it. This was all part of the plan. All right.
All right. Okay. So we have just interchangeable belts. Pac and Okada in the Gold League. So Pac comes in with 3 points. Okada lost to Fletcher last week, so he has zero. And Pac hits a missile drop kick off the top and then a kip up, as they note, shades of the Dynamite Kid. Which is like, yeah, Pac is starting to remind me of the Dynamite Kid.
He's British, he's kind of short, and he's really, really muscular. Yes.
The crowd really took to Okada here, who kind of worked the match as a babyface. He's selling for Pac, and we get Okada chants going on. He would go for the elbow off the top, and when he did that middle finger pose, crowd loved it. Pac then runs the ropes for his lariat setup, but then gets caught with a drop kick, and the Rainmaker is countered with Pac doing a roll-up, which they are quick to note is how Fletcher caught him last week. This time Okada kicks out and then pops up, hits Pac with a tombstone. Both men are down. There's a superplex followed by a lariat by Pac, and he goes for the brutalizer, and when applying it, Okada manages to hook the leg and cradle Pac in 13 and a half minutes, getting his first 3 points of the tournament, and he is now tied with Pac, Fletcher, and Kevin Knight.
Mm-hmm. The result of this one, I thought was kind of obvious, because I wouldn't have expected Okada to lose two matches in a row in this tournament. But nonetheless, I think it was still very interesting to see like two top heels in this tournament be booked against each other, and to see who the crowd would side with. And like in these sort of tournaments, in AEW, the crowd is just really there for great wrestling. And like, if given the choice, they'd probably cheer for the both of them. But in this scenario, maybe Okada had the more sort of fan-friendly spots. Having Okada squeak by with a victory via roll-up, I think, does a good job of protecting Pac's credibility in the loss. Thought it was a good TV match, not necessarily great. Didn't really reach the higher gear of some of, like, the other standout collision, Continental Classic matches we've had thus far. But still a very good TV match, in my opinion. What did you think?
I like the match. It wasn't the match of the show for me, but I thought it was like good for the 13 minutes it had. I liked seeing Okada in sort of a different role here. And yeah, there does seem to be this feel of almost like there's a lot of focus on protecting the loser in some of these, which I think is sometimes, you know, you can be too protective at times. I think it's...
But I don't, like, if you're the thing is, you've loaded this tournament now with really top names, right? And as a result, I can give that a bit of a pass. This wasn't like, you know, Ric Flair joining the Survivor Series team in 1991 and having like the entire match DQ'd.
Spoilers,
with the exception of Ric Flair, with the exception of only Ric Flair, just because they were all brawling. Like, it wasn't
brilliant finish.
Lazy.
Brilliant.
I much prefer something like this if you're going to protect somebody.
Fair enough.
So Shelton in the chat says in the promo, they said that they would get a shot against Shibata, Joe, and Hobbs if Dark Order won. So I guess no free bird rule. It, according to Shelton, I did not catch that personally. But
okay, well, there you go. Stand-in non-title match.
Yeah, all right. This podcast is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Fiscally responsible, financial geniuses, monetary magicians. These are things people say about drivers who switch their car insurance to Progressive and save hundreds. Because Progressive offers discounts for paying in full, owning a home, and more. Plus, you can count on their great customer service to help you when you need it, so your dollar goes a long way. Visit Progressive.com to see if you could save on car insurance. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Potential savings will vary. Not available in all states or situations. The holiday season is fast approaching, but if you still have a few people left on your shopping list, don't worry. Uncommon Goods takes the hassle out of holiday gifting with thousands of unique, one-of-a-kind presents you won't find anywhere else. Many of these gifts are high quality, handmade, or crafted by independent artists and small makers. One standout gift this season is the personalized Pet Family Blanket, an exclusive item created by artist Shelly Klein and available only at Uncommon Goods. Shelly creates custom portraits in her sweetly simple illustration style, where you can customize skin tones, hair, clothing colors, and pet details to make it truly personal. Measuring 50 by 60 inches, made from soft cotton and polyester, it's perfect for snuggling with your furry family. Plus, each purchase supports small makers and donates $1 to a nonprofit of your choice, including the International Rescue Committee and American Forests. So don't wait. Make this holiday the year you give something truly unforgettable. To get 15% off your next gift, go to uncommongoods.com/postwrestling. That's uncommongoods.com/postwrestling for 15% off. Don't miss out on this limited time offer. Uncommon Goods. We're all out of the ordinary.
If you're the purchasing manager at a manufacturing plant, you know having a trusted partner makes all the difference. That's why, hands down, you count on Grainger for auto reordering. With on-time restocks, your team will have the cut-resistant gloves they need at the start of their shift. And you can end your day knowing they've got safety well in hand. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Mark Briscoe mentions facing Daniel Garcia 1 year ago when Garcia was champion. They went 1-1, so they're going to have their rematch next week on the Cardiff version of Winter is Coming.
Yeah, which is in the afternoon.
That's right. That's Saturday. Right. That's the same day as the Cena retirement show. That's so we got Collision in Wales.
So we're getting Winter is Coming across two continents.
Correct. Yes. Yeah. Atlanta and Cardiff.
Yeah.
They're basically the same thing.
I don't imagine the seasons to be very similar across like those two places. Like, would it be? I guess it depends on how north each is.
Yeah. I don't know. I would be like, you know what? I'll do the Atlanta show. You guys go to Cardiff. I'm good. Just having
I'd love to go to Cardiff. Wouldn't that be fun?
No. Well, Ricochet and G.O.D. are shown earlier today, and Ricochet has had to put his phone on Do Not Disturb because of all the promoters hitting him up to come save their promotions. He always goes viral, and I'm also known for my charity work, and I'm going to be doing charity this Friday when I give Dalton Castle a shot at Final Battle, and then I'm going to stay in Columbus for Collision on Saturday night. So, I don't think Dalton Castle's winning this belt on Friday. That's my prediction.
Highly unlikely, I'd say. Yeah.
Renee interviews, she's with members of the conglomeration. We've got Willow with Harley and Roderick Strong. They're teeing up Cassidy against Roderick Strong on Collision Saturday in the Blue League. And Strong emphasizes he is not in the conglomeration and he will win the Continental Classic. He will not. And there's a proposal to have a match with no chops, and Strong is not interested in this and threatens to break Cassidy's back.
Mm-hmm. They seem to be done with the whole Death Riders thing, and you know this because, like, I mean, they're doing a lot more comedy again, which I think, like, is perfectly fine. I'm kind of getting a kick out of Roderick Strong's shtick of just being the reluctant member of the conglomeration. And more importantly, like, Kyle O'Reilly isn't here, so he still kind of retains a bit of a serious note just by not being involved in all of this. But this is kind of what makes the conglomeration, you know, like, fan favorites.
Then we have footage of Darby Allin in a hospital. And I thought for sure someone was going to run in and attack this guy in his hospital bed. But he's just lying there. He's got, like, an IV drip, and he has not been cleared to travel or compete. And we will get an update on Collision.
So this was after the Kevin Knight match?
Yes.
Or was there something else?
No, that was our last.
What happened in the Kevin Knight match that put him in the hospital?
Well, they tried to explain it's an accumulation of all he's put himself through in the last couple of weeks. I mean, he was set on fire. Darby. Okay. So
gotcha.
Yes, we'll get an update on Saturday.
This guy should just, like, I mean, he should just set up his permanent residence in a hospital. It just seems like he's just always there.
Kyle Fletcher and Kevin Knight was next in the Gold League. Both men with 3 points. And, Kevin Knight, I think, has been kind of like the breakout performer so far a week into this Continental Classic, because this was just an excellent match that they had. You know that Bryan Danielson is invested when he's really getting into the, like, minutia, and he just is gushing about Kyle Fletcher. He's got to have one of the best body slams in AEW, and you know this guy's got a folder, like, on his, like, whatever his electronic slams. Device of, like, everyone's body slams and, like, assessing them, and this is, he never said the best body slam, one of the best body slams, so I do want that top five.
Like, if he pens a new book, I think that would be an entire chapter, like, my top 10 body slams.
Danielson's book of lists.
Yeah. Oh,
he was made for SEO, but I don't think we'll ever see that realized, will we? Knight selling the midsection, but not enough to prevent him from the leaping Rana to the top and then a jumping DDT. Fletcher did, like, a million clotheslines, most of them springboards in this match. He gets hit with a DDT on the edge of the apron and then is knocked off balance from the top. A superplex gets countered and Fletcher is placed in the Tree of Woe, allowing Knight to once again hit the coast-to-coast dropkick, but instead of going for the cover, climbs to the top for a UFO splash and lands on the knees. He gets cradled, and at this point, they did a couple of near falls that the crowd was so into. He survives a last ride powerbomb. Then there's a brainbuster attempt by Fletcher, turned into a small package. Again, the crowd reacts big for the kick out, and Fletcher finally hits him with the running kick in the corner and brainbuster in 13 minutes and 7 seconds. But an awesome match as Fletcher moves to 6 points and first place in the Gold League.
Great match. You know, one that did hit that higher gear. I think Kevin Knight, I agree with you, has been the breakout star of this tournament thus far. He's been looking really great in these singles matches. I was almost a little bit disappointed that we didn't get that little win streak for him that I was kind of hoping for, so that, like, that spotlight would be that much bigger on him. Yes, I understand he was going up against Kyle Fletcher, who probably, like, to many might be the favorite in this entire tournament. But I think Fletcher could have afforded this loss. I personally think so. You know, it wouldn't have hurt Fletcher in the long term, especially if he was going to make it to the Final Four. And I think it would have benefited Knight greatly that you could, of course, build to a future rematch with. But nonetheless, like, I would almost say, like, Knight has, even just in these couple weeks and with performances like this, gained enough to feel like he's proven enough that I'm sure he would inspire confidence in people into thinking that he has potential of being a main eventer someday. You know, similar to how maybe a Kyle Fletcher might have just a little over a year ago.
Don Callis gets into the ring, and he's joined by Josh Alexander and Hechicero, who have the duffel bags of the Young Bucks money. And for whatever reason, they go to a commercial break and presumably just talked through this whole break. We come back, they're still in the ring. And Callis explains he can forgive a lot of things. He can forgive someone for lying, for cheating, if you kill someone. but cannot forgive someone for siding with Kenny Omega. And I've got your money, so Bucks, why don't you grow some nuts and come get it? So the Bucks, with their nuts, charge the ring, and they attack everyone. They hit a BTE trigger to Fletcher, and then Okada runs in and nails Matt with the Rainmaker. Nick turns around, can't believe that Okada has attacked his brother. And Josh Alexander comes in, nails Nick from behind. The Jurassic Express are out. Okada would kick Luchasaurus low, gives a middle finger to Jack Perry, so Jack Perry bites on the finger, and the Don Callis family member take over with the numbers advantage. Callis is laying in shots on Matt, and then he goes for Nick's eye. And at this point, Kenny Omega decides, okay, I'll get up. I'll go end this. And out comes Kenny Omega in his own goddamn Christmas sweater.
I don't have a good visual on this. What exactly is he holding?
It looked to be, it says Kenny Omega on it, and it seems like it's Kenny Omega as the Grinch, I think is what the design is.
But what else? What is he holding here?
I couldn't get that good of a look on it.
I'm sure there's something.
I imagine this is being sold for probably $100.
I'll look it up.
You investigate. Yeah. Yeah, so okay. Kenny stands with the Bucks and Jurassic Express as and this did end with in this whole save by Omega. He's left alone with Okada. So we did get a brief spot here, giving a Snapdragon to Okada, who then escaped before the V trigger. So certainly felt like some kind of a 10-man tag at one of these upcoming shows over the next few weeks. How much is this going for?
ProWrestlingTees.com has this. It's the Kenny Omega Perfect Christmas Holiday Sweatshirt at $50. Okay. And it's Kenny Omega clutching a cat, which is actually quite adorable.
All right. Okay. Well, there you go.
Awesome.
That was our involvement of Kenny Omega on this.
They could be building to a 5-on-5. They could also be building to a 6-on-6.
There's probably a lot of different iterations of these combos that we will see.
There were 6 Callis family members, and I guess it just makes you wonder, like, if that's the case, will the babyfaces bring in somebody else?
They could have a 10-man tag with this version of the Don Callis family and another 10-man tag, and probably could have a third 10-man tag with all versions of the Don Callis family.
That is very, very true, yeah. It was great to see a little bit of interaction between Okada and Kenny, and I guess I'm wondering, like, do you think they're like, was this a tease of another matchup between the two, or was this just a build to the 10-man tag?
I think we'll see them in the tag. I don't know. I don't know if they're going to go that route again.
You don't think so? See, the way Kenny was talking about it was like as if, you know, like what we saw at All In was their way of building to another trilogy between the two of them. And now I kind of feel like we're talking about a limited clock with Kenny Omega.
Oh, I think it's a very limited clock. And I think for those reasons, I think like that match at All in July, like it was a really good match. Yeah. But I don't think anyone is going to put that match alongside like the others, like the legend that has grown of those matches that I think they're almost in a position where it's like they could have like an incredible match. And it's like they are fighting their own history at this point that like this match is just not going to be of the level of like this incredible bar they have set for themselves.
I hate to say it, but I almost wonder if, like, even now they've already kind of passed that time where they would even have as great of a match as they managed to have over the summer. I mean, it would have to be a very different type of match, I think, from anything that's preceded it. But, you know, how often has Kenny wrestled singles matches, period, over the past year? You know, like, that's...
No, they've been very selective. Like, there's a reason they are putting him in all these, like tag scenarios or 10-mans like this. I think there's, like, I think there's certainly a reason for that as well. Like, not to say he can't do a singles match, but it's going to be... it's going to be selective, like, when called upon to do one of those big matches. The Hardcore Holiday Death Match with Megan Bain and Marina Shafir against the Timeless Love Bombs. So the tournament final will be next week in Atlanta with this winning team taking on the Babes of Wrath. So we had a all Christmas-themed weapons. We had a champagne bottle that was broken over Marina Shafir's head, which keeps the consecutive streak of blood on AEW programming. There was a barbed wire... wrapped candy cane that was utilized by Mina Shirakawa, and in the ring, they are fighting, and Megan Bain reverses and goes for a double vertical to Toni Storm and Mina Shirakawa. And I thought she killed these two. This was a rough looking spot.
More of a horizontal.
Yes, vertical suplex. A horizontal suplex. Maybe she was inventing something new here. Then we had a table like there was like wrapping paper over it, I believe.
Yeah, because it's Christmas
themed. Of course. A pan was brought in. Bane and Shafir then miss. They nail one another with their weapons, one with a chair, one with the pan. And as a Storm Zero is hit to Megan Bane off the apron through the table, and then Shafir applies Mother's Milk onto Mina, but Storm passed.
This was a bit weird. Shafir was going for some tape in the corner, and then it just looked like she was abandoning it. To just go for the Mother's Milk. And I think I heard her say, like...
Oh, you had the close-up of her, and she's like, yeah, we're okay.
Yeah. So, like, I don't know. Did something go wrong here? Did she abandon some spot, it looked like?
It was weird. I didn't know what she was exactly going for here, because you're right. She just kind of abandoned this. And then, with her and Mother's Milk, Storm passes Mina a pool cue to stab Marina in the face. So, then... Shafir comes, is hit with a sling blade onto a chair. Bane breaks it up. Shafir lays down for Bane to dump Toni onto her for Mother's Milk, but she pops off the shoulders and hits a strong zero to Bane on top of Shafir. And then Santa Claus comes out. It's revealed to be Luther, who has a gift wrapped shoe for Toni Storm, who nails Shafir and wins the match in 11 minutes and 8 seconds.
Yes, Luther Claus. Showed up here. Oh. Yeah. Great. I think, like, for me, despite the deathmatch moniker, that's what they call this, right? It's holiday hardcore deathmatch. Yeah, despite the deathmatch moniker, I felt this one was more played for comedy than your typical AEW deathmatch. And in some ways, that's kind of refreshing because we've seen so much of just the violent variety. But then again, I mean, to me, when it comes to Bane and Shafir, I think I would have preferred violence, you know, because you did such a great job, especially with Marina, at building those two during Blood and Guts. It almost felt like the great value coming out of Blood and Guts was the tremendous job you did towards building to this particular tag match, and in particular, Bane and Shafir. I did not think any of these tag performances for Bane and Shafir, and this one was the most important of them. I don't think any of those... built on that momentum that you built already through Blood and Guts. And in fact, I felt a comedy match like this in particular kind of humanized Marina Shafir for me. Like, it didn't really do the job of making her feel like a dominating presence the way a Jon Moxley feels like a dominating, threatening, scary presence, you know? Something like this Luther spot, I think, would have been fine for, like, most of the women on the roster. Like, even, like, you know, I don't know, like, a Nyla Rose or even, like, a Mercedes Moné, like, selling for this sort of, like, comedy thing, taking this thing out of the, like, actually going for the gift that this, like, random Santa Claus is presenting to her, I think would have been perfectly fine. But for Marina Shafir, I did not like that for her. I thought it kind of harmed the aura surrounding her. But overall, like, it was an entertaining match with, like, you know, like, entertaining value in table breaks and spots and weapons. But to me, it felt like a bit of a disappointment given just the great job they did in building this into, like, this sort of big, serious, violent blow-off.
Yeah, I love that ending to Blood and Guts. Like, I thought, like, that was, to me, one of the strongest parts of that show was just how well they built up this semifinal as a result of it. And, like... whether like this is like fair or not, like, you watch a match like this where it's all the Christmas themed weapons and it just takes you back to like the lows of like the WWE style of hardcore match with the women where it would just be the same type of stuff, and it's really hard to take this stuff seriously. And we are coming off a wave of like such big violent matches in AEW that even when you're like, this was almost like comedy hardcore, which is like you're still doing these big spots, but they're not going to resonate the same way, like, because you're blanketing this in just a lot of just comedic overtones that I just didn't feel like really suited the level they had brought this up to from the end of Blood and Guts.
One of the ideas they had was to put barbed wire around a candy cane, and like, that sounds risky, but it's also something that certainly was not well conveyed upon first, you know, appearance. It either the barbed wire just didn't show up enough, or just the fact that it was a candy cane just kind of took people out of maybe the seriousness of the spot, and therefore you didn't really get some of those big reactions that a straight plank with barbed wire I think would have elicited. And again, like, you could do a feed match that might be plenty violent, but I do think overall it takes away from the tone.
And I think it's still too far away from Christmas.
I don't think
you can do this match when you're closer to Thanksgiving than you are to Christmas.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
It's only the third. I'll give you that. It's only the third. I don't even have a Christmas.
Are your lights up yet?
No. No.
Really?
It's early, dude.
That's not that early.
If they had done this next week, I would have been like, okay, you're in the zone. December 3rd is way too early for
this.
There
are people, like in Canada, because we don't have American Thanksgiving, there are people that like will put their lights up the day after Halloween. You know?
Well, those people are crazy. That's a lot.
But I would certainly say after American Thanksgiving, I think it's more than fair game.
Well, fine. That's the least of my complaints on this one. But yeah, I was left a little disappointed.
Hello, hello, hello. Davey Portman here from Poison Rana. We cover NXT every Tuesday night on the Post Wrestling feed in a show we call Up Next. But we do so much more. Follow Poison Rana Pod on YouTube or wherever you get your podcasts for our live Sunday show, plus our Patreon with movie reviews, retro wrestling reviews, and more. Find out everything at poisonrana.ca.
Statlander and Jamie Hayter are going to face the Sisters of Sin at the Cardiff show next week. And after Hayter and Chris win, then Hayter wants to have a chat with Statlander about going for the women's title.
Yeah. Happy to see this. Happy to see Jamie Hayter be like, you know, like basically pushed towards the title picture right now with Statlander. And Statlander, I think, represents, a place for a lot of the mid-card to actually make their ascent towards the title mix. And I think it's a bit tougher to predict these results versus if it was like maybe a Toni Storm versus Jamie Hayter.
Did Jamie Hayter heal herself towards this Cardiff crowd? She's like, there's nothing to do in Cardiff besides beat people up. So why don't we team up?
A little bit, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Dark Order's on the way to the ring. Hangman storms by. Reynolds stops him, says, please don't ruin this for us. And Page accepts, but as soon as the match is over, he gets his hands on the ops. Renee interviewed Mercedes Moné, who cut her off after Renee asked about her being unsuccessful at Full Gear, dismisses this match with Red Velvet on Friday, and says, you say a lot on ROH when I'm not there, because I'm always here. Yes, I'm never on the show of which I own this belt, but I will show up on Honor Club this week. So she will be on Honor Club on Thursday to talk before this match on Friday.
Yeah,
great segment. This really sold me on a final battle on Friday.
Well, you have to pay for 1 month subscription if you want to see the match, right? So
You'd be stupid not to watch this show tomorrow because your subscription, you could just subscribe tomorrow and you get both.
For it anyway. That's right.
FTR's with Big Stoke and Stokely, not realizing the Thanksgiving edition of Collision, referred to a Collision last Saturday, and calls it pathetic that Juice and Austin Gunn are dedicating their belts to Jay White and Colton Gunn. They run down Juice as a career bag carrier, and that Austin only got this job because of his father, and we dare you to try and put your hands on our belts again this Saturday. So I didn't get the sense we're getting a match on Saturday, but we're probably getting a segment where I bet they get their hands on the belts again.
Oh, didn't they announce this for Winter is Coming? Or am I mistaken?
They may have. There's been a slew of announcements and a lot of shows coming up.
Well, yeah, very good set of three quick promos from FTR and Stokely. I we had Cash calling Juice Mr. Storm here, which I thought was kind of funny. No?
It was good. It was a good reference.
See, because they're married in real life.
Okay.
I get it.
Got it. I got it. Okay. And and she didn't do Juice tonight in the hardcore match.
Oh, okay, yes. Mm-hmm.
We are getting the Dynamite Diamond Ring Battle Royal December 17th on the Holiday Bash episode. Then after that, the final will be the next week. And then the winner of that match will get a title match at Maximum Carnage on January 14th in Phoenix.
Yeah.
My head is just spinning. Like, there's like 5,000 shows coming up, and just tune in every week. There's going to be good wrestling on most of the shows. Like, that's all they have to say.
I mean, this is not really tough to understand, but okay. Like, I guess you're saying, did they need to announce everything
recap,
at one time?
Tell me the Dynamite Diamond Ring path.
So I wrote it down. So it's not really fair, but like, right. Yeah, it's next week. Wait, 2 weeks you're getting the battle.
What are all the names? Because all three shows have different theme names. Do you know?
Winner's coming next week.
But it's not happening next week. The Dynamite Diamond Battle Royal.
Fine. Winner is coming next week, and then the one after that is
which holiday themed show is it?
Is it Holiday Bash or
Holiday
is it,
Bash is the okay. Battle Royal. Miracle then the next week 30, are the finals. Do you know where those are going to take place?
Miracle on 34th Street.
No, Dynamite on 34th Street. Come on. And then where is the title match?
Maximum Carnage.
Okay, you know what? Then call me a fucking idiot because Wei Ting cannot get stumped. Okay,
all right. This is not too like I feel like Don Callis cutting a promo on you. This is not stupid.
Oh wait. That we're gonna get to Don Callis just shit. On you nerds, you online pricks. Hobbs, Shibata, and Hook against the Dark Order. You know, John Silver, this was his chance to get a Dynamite match in this year, so he made all the most of it, lighting up Hook with kicks before he was T-boned. Hobbs is in World's Strongest Slam onto Reynolds. Shibata boots Uno off the turnbuckle, and then we go through picture-in-picture. This was a match that did not need a picture-in-picture break. But we come back. Shibata takes a DDT along with Hook. There's a double team or a double DDT by Evil Uno. This did not have the same effect that Eddie Kingston's DDT had on Shibata. And then Uno and Hobbs are alone, and it ends with a World's Strongest Slam. The save is made by Silver and Reynolds. They're choked out, and a spinebuster by Hobbs pins Uno in 6-11, and then it's Hangman in with the chain, gets knocked down by Shibata. Hobbs misses nailing Shibata, and Page uses a bottle to Hobbs. Second time on the show, we got a bottle broken over someone's head. And the Buckshot gets stopped by security who are in to save Hobbs. And so Hangman takes out all the members of security, including laying out one with a Buckshot.
Yeah.
But he kept his word. He did not ruin it for the Dark Order. They ruined it for themselves.
So, like, you know, commentary was suggesting that this might lead to some sort of fines, maybe even suspension. And I wonder if this might be some sort of way of maybe.
Wait a minute. You said the same thing when Roman Reigns took out the NYPD. OK, there's a great allowance right. for these wrestlers when they're in the heat of battle. OK,
we didn't even hear of a fine.
Nothing. He's fine. OK, it's Roman Reigns. OK, a couple cops.
We know who the man knows. OK, I'm sure like it was like, you know, Mark Shapiro showing up with a bag of money or just making some phone calls and be like, hey, listen. All right. We know people who know people. Okay.
It's the last bastion of unifying content for us.
That's it. You're right.
We got
like,
it,
you
Mark.
Took out cool. cops and like there was no even follow up, but all right.
But here we might. Maybe he'll spend Christmas in the Slammer.
that would be so sad. I thought the squash was exactly what it needed to be. I think the Dark Order, like at this point, you only really hear about the Dark Order on AEW if you need a reason to make Hangman angry. So they managed to do that perfectly fine here.
So then we go to Renee. She is with Don Callis, Okada, and Fletcher. And Okada was very funny here. He blames Takeshita for what happened out there with Kenny Omega and the Young Bucks. Takeshita, who Callis says is training for Saturday's match, walks in. He says, I'm right here. Renee,
I'm
then,
right here to the side of the camera.
Oh, I didn't see you. Renee, then speaking on behalf of every wrestling reviewer out there, asks Okada or Callis, why isn't Okada putting both legs of the championship on the line? The legs.
I've never heard it referred to as legs before, but they
combined Callis and Renee said legs like four times here. So this was as close as we got to Tony Khan cutting a promo on TV using his puppet here in Don Callis. So Callis has to explain for all you idiots out there. It's a real simple concept. These are the two legs of the championship that were combined, and this is the symbol of both legs of the championship. and Renee presses. Well, why aren't you putting both on the line? And that's because Callis says, we're not charitable and are not going to put both on the line. So what we are trying to, I guess, take from this way, this is not a unified championship. These are two legs that are separate from one another. We should not have one belt. We should have two belts, shouldn't we? I'm sorry. The internet won this argument, okay? And Tony Khan did not.
I think these new championships should be turned into pants instead of a belt around somebody's
Who
waist.
Better than pants for Okada to wear, okay?
Oh, long pants.
Pants yeah. Okada comes out. We can have a balloon representing the unified championship, yeah. And then he's got the two legs to wear as well. Why were these all merged into one belt? Tell me.
Dude, I have no clue. And clearly, I think from something like a segment like this, I get the sense that to Tony Khan,
this was a gotten to segment.
To Tony Khan, I imagine this was something that didn't deserve any sort of explanation. This was always so clear to everybody. You know, this unified championship is not...
This continental championship that we haven't seen for 6 months is all of a sudden prominently displayed, and now the old championship that we had retired is back.
Yeah.
The ununified champion.
Why aren't we unifying Mercedes Moné's like 13 championships into one belt? Maybe we can work on that. I mean,
she's working on like two octopuses at this point.
It's just like, so we can at least say, okay, they gave us an explanation, I suppose, if you want to call it that. I still don't think it's a very satisfying one.
I think this just called way more attention to it than it probably had. And that's what happens when you're very much, listen to all criticism out there.
It doesn't give a real justification for why these titles were unified into a new championship in the first place. You know, the assumption is that once you unify a championship, the lineage of that one, it gets absorbed and it kind of ceases to exist.
Like this literally, like we may joke about this being the ununified title. Like if Okada doesn't win this tournament, this is an ununified championship. He has one belt and the winner has the other. Like we are separating the belts if Okada loses this tournament.
Yeah, not to mention the fact, and thank you, chat room Shelton here, is suggesting, like, bringing up the fact that now, again, there exists a national championship and an international championship. So, again, in Tony's mind, I have no doubt all of this makes perfect sense, but it's not been very well conveyed or justified, in my opinion.
What's the hierarchy of national, international, and continental? Like, national should be the lowest, right? Continental is next, and international is taking into account multiple continents, right?
Exactly, yeah. But then where does world fit in?
Well, that's the whole world. Like the international...
The oceans.
Exactly. Like landmass is represented by the international champion. But
shouldn't we have a championship just for the water then? I guess we did. The All-Atlantic.
We used to have the All-Atlantic. We could, you know, All-Japan used to have the Pacific.
Can we have a championship for the airspace championship?
Okay. These are all potential belts that Tony may have in his locker in Jacksonville.
It's so ridiculous. But I look forward to the next Don Callis promo segment airing out Tony Khan's grievances.
Felt like a very defensive segment that was so like unnecessary on this show. But here we go. December on the Post Wrestling Cafe, we have two editions of Rewind Away set for you, including a patron's pick where you have voted for us to review the Survivor Series from 1991, Hulk Hogan's Gravest Challenge. Then it's over to 2002 and a review of the very first WWE draft involving Raw and SmackDown as they kick off the brand extension. David Bitsenspan is going to join me as we review Video Killed the Radio Star, a documentary on Bubba the Love Sponge, and the sex tape involving Hulk Hogan. Plus, we will have reviews of TNA Final Resolution, New Japan's World Tag League Final, Collision Course every single week, and XL editions of Rewind to Raw, Dynamite, and SmackDown. Sign up now at postwrestlingcafe.com. So Paige is backstage. He's furious. He fought for 3 years to get the belt back and gave everything, fought everyone, and the person who cost me was Hook. This is only a bump in the road. I will take it back. I will fight Hobbs and Shibata next week, but I'm not going to be alone. You know who's coming for you. Get your affairs in order. You're going to die. So I thought this was good. Like, I was glad that they just didn't, like, have Paige just, I lost the title and just moving on. This should be this man's mission from this point forward.
Yeah, a pissed off Page, I think, is my favorite Page. So, I mean, he's selling the effects of the loss relatively well. It'll be really interesting to see how his motivation towards the championship will conflict with Swerve's. So for now, there's a truce. But I mean, how long will this partnership last? That to me is interesting storytelling coming up.
And then Moxley and Claudio ended the show in the Blue League, both with 3 points. And Renee did the Megan O'Leary role, for those that are familiar with Megan O'Leary's role on the UFC broadcast, where she'll be there in the aisle as the fighters are coming out, and she's doing like an on-camera. So I like the fact that they're playing around with different stuff like this. So Moxley and Claudio pass her by as she's teeing up the match. And she also
mentioned in this interview that I had a chance to speak to John Moxley earlier today.
She scored the interview.
Yeah. And I suppose, like, I'm like, yeah, you don't say. I mean, I wonder, like, if they have, like, in their relationship, in kayfabe, like, is there a strictly on the record interviewing time versus just, like, you know, personal, or just, like, you know, husband and wife, can you do the dishes, like, type of time, you know?
This was the dilemma discussed in Superman. The last film that came out. Did you see it?
Oh, I did. I don't remember. You're right.
They had
right,
a whole discussion
exactly.
about off the record.
Totally. You're right.
Okay.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. Exactly that. Yeah.
They also showed footage of Claudio winning the CMLL heavyweight title from Gran Guerrero last Friday at Arena Mexico, which was quite the match that the two of them had. So in theory, Claudio will be going down to Mexico, you know, maybe on some kind of routine basis. So this was so strange. I definitely want to know what you made of this. So Marina comes out with Moxley and is standing there at ringside. And then Danielson calls attention to it. It's like, why is Marina out here? No one's allowed at ringside. And with that, the referee sends Marina out and she leaves. And this wasn't like, this had no like angle attached to it. There was nothing beyond this. And then the announcers are like over covering for it. They're like, well, it's a good thing Marina left in time, because you would forfeit the tournament if you broke that rule of having someone at ringside. And I was very confused why she even came out here. Like, there seemed to be no purpose for it.
I mean, Yuta and was it Pac? Well, were also accompanying Claudio as well, weren't they?
They didn't come to ringside.
They weren't there? I think
I mean, they were gone. When the match began, it was just Marina that was there.
So, I mean, Shafir...
This is like the Survivor Series way. You can walk out with them, but you can't stay unless you're Sherry.
The Death Riders always come out with, like, you know, seconds and people next to them, right? So I just took this as that. I think Danielson calling attention to it might have just been Danielson trying to pick up on a detail that might have not necessarily supposed to have been there.
All right.
And not a part of the story, I don't think.
So Moxley has run into the steps and then swung into them, and Moxley is bleeding, and there would be a lot of bleeding here. He takes a giant swing inside of the ring, and somehow his blood just started just erupting from this wound in the giant swing, and it goes into the sharpshooter, and all of a sudden it's WrestleMania 13 here with Moxley just fighting toward the rope, and Claudio turns it into a crossface. Moxley reverses to a bulldog, and they get into a big set of strikes, head to the floor. Moxley hits a stomp for a two count, goes for the rear naked choke, but is lifted and dumped to the floor, and it's a running double stomp to Moxley as he is seated on a chair by Claudio. Moxley would kick out of a powerbomb. He's shaking his head in defiance and hits the paradigm shift, but can't manage to go for the cover. Justin Roberts then announces 5 minutes left, and as soon as he finishes the update, boom, running European uppercut by Claudio, and he pins John Moxley. And I thought the best line of this whole thing was Bryan Danielson in the post-match stating, "I could never beat John Moxley while I was in the Death Riders, and therefore that's why we all considered Moxley the leader."
Mm.
I thought that was like just a great little point to throw out there as well. Like this, whether there's this mutiny that is going to be forming, it's like John Moxley's control of this group has been because of his dominance. And now it's like the supporting players are breaking down. Like, why is this guy our leader?
He's not the alpha anymore. You know, this was definitely a statement on like Moxley's ranking internally within the stable. It's visually spelling out for you that he is no longer the strongest member of the team. And it's not even like, you know, next to Pac, it's against Claudio, who I don't know if like people Well, they certainly perceive Claudio to be the strongest, but like as the next leader, I think people are looking more towards Pac. So like, where in reality does Moxley rank? You know, is he even second? Could he be number three? But it was a great match, really high intensity. I think in all of this storytelling of Moxley's sort of descent, he's been so good this entire storyline. I would even say the entire year. He is so consistently great as just a storyteller, as a wrestler who brings intensity to his professional wrestling matches. I think it's been actually a tremendous year for Jon Moxley. Might have not started out the best, coming off of maybe some of the worst of like the Death Riders sort of, I think us being just sick of all of that, but like it's resulted in
I think this has been a really good year for Jon Moxley. Like, yeah, even going to the beginning of the year, that Revolution show, and it got a lot of criticism of him and Copeland. Like, they did a very good number for that Revolution show, and I think when you look at the totality of that title reign, I think the positive greatly outweighed it, and I think that All In match with Hangman and that show is going to really be remembered as one of AEW's big shows in its history, and just that whole setup to Hangman. Like, that's when the tide seemed to really turn about, like, the opinion toward AEW and discourse was the lead up to All In Texas, and once there was that firm challenger in place, and Hangman and Ospreay were the leading figures, and you knew, okay, this is peaking for Texas, and they nailed it with that show in July.
100%. In this match with Claudio, I thought Moxley, in fact, like, played a pretty strong babyface who refused to give up. You even had that face full of blood, you know, selling the sharpshooter moment that obviously, you know, we all think about Austin and Brett, of course. So I have to think, like, part of this match might have been a deliberate way for them to give us the feeling of sympathy for Moxley ahead of the eventual Death Riders turn on him. Because, I mean, coming out of this run, I mean, you have an incredible babyface waiting in Jon Moxley again.
So overall thoughts on Dynamite tonight. I really enjoyed the main event and the Knight Fletcher match. I would say that the women's death match I found to be kind of underwhelming. I wasn't as high on that. Okada and Pac was a good match, but I would say of the three, I think I'd put it below the other two for tonight.
I do too. Yeah, I do too. But there's always just, I think, an air of like enjoyment out of these Continental Classic shows, you know, where this is AEW at its most sports, like at its most serious. Mm-hmm. And you're usually, even like, I mean, a match that might not have been the best of the three is still a really good match in Pac versus Okada.
You got three really great, like really good tournament matches on this show, like Okada and Pac. If that's like number three of the, like, that's still like a really good match that you got overall. So
yeah,
I think the classic is really, you know, it's going to carry these shows because, you know, as you get deeper into the tournament, these wins will mean a whole lot more. And then you can go back and look at like the booking of some of these. It's very difficult at this point when we don't know what the full picture is going to be points wise for all these different people.
Yeah. So I overall enjoyed really this Dynamite a lot. I think I'm going to continue to enjoy Collision a whole lot throughout the Continental Classic as well, because those shows are really propped up by, like, you know, relevant good wrestling throughout the tournament as well. We didn't mention this, but with the Dynamite Battle Royal, you think MJF's coming back? He has to, right, to defend. Like, he doesn't have to, but he likely will, don't you think?
I think it certainly teases it towards that, and given the locations too, I mean,
hold on a second. Refresh me. So, like, the winner of the Battle Royal faces MJF, right?
Is that Isn't it the works? Final two? Don't the final two have the match?
Man,
I'm pretty sure that's how it works. I think it's sure? The last two in the Battle Royal.
In either case, I fully expect MJF to come back because I don't see him just not having some role.
The first week, the Battle Royal is in Manchester, England. The next week with the finals is the New York City shows at Manhattan Center. So, I mean, it would make sense that, like, that would be a good target if his schedule is, like, wrapped up from what he's got going on, that he can come back for that. But certainly if you're promoting that type of match, you would think that would be a potential return.
Yeah, let me get to the bottom of this, okay? There were two winners of the Battle Royal in 2024, unlike the previous years, and the co-winners faced each other for the right to challenge for the reigning Dynamite Diamond Ring.
So it was the last two in the Battle Royal.
So they would have the winner of the final match. So the two final entrants will go on to have a match. The winners of that match will go on to face MJF for the ring. That's what they did last year. This year, though.
Well, that was not announced. I took it to be that it will be the Battle Royal. The next week, the two finalists meet, and that winner gets the title shot.
That's right. Yes.
So in theory, MJF would have to be in the Battle Royal then.
In theory, yeah. And in theory, the ring would be granted to the winner of the singles match.
Sufficiently confused. Maybe Don Callis will explain this simple concept to us next week in a pre-tape segment. Announced for Collision, which again, Way is all in. He's doing Collision Course this Saturday. He's like, I'm just going to do this show every week. It's great. So it's Roderick Strong and Orange Cassidy, Claudio against Máscara Dorada, and John Moxley against Konosuke Takeshita. All Blue League
that
matches
sounds like
on
a
Saturday.
Pay-per-view. That sounds amazing, doesn't it?
It's no Survivor Series, but I mean,
they need some great lineups to just combat the jump in time zones and the time different. It's going to be a different time every single week for these shows.
All right, we're going to say goodbye to everyone. Hey, if you are not part of the Post Wrestling Cafe, you are missing out. We went 45 minutes chatting all of the big news, big discussion on the TNA deal on AMC, as well as my diatribe on the Muhammad Ali American Boxing Reform Act. I mean, that's what's going to bring in all the new cafe subscribers.
It's important. It's very important.
It is. It is. Yeah. There was quite a interesting interview with Nick Khan today on the Pat McAfee show. All that and update on the World Tag League, a big discussion.
A lot about Hiroshi Tanahashi's final match at the Tokyo Dome.
Yes. If you have not seen it, you can go to socialsuplex.com. Trish Spears wrote this excellent, this reported out story on the retirement match and all the politics that went into this match with Okada. And we talked about that on the XL version. And she was our guest today on Pollock and Thurston discussing the article. So I encourage people to go check this out. I think you will get a lot out of reading it. The Final Road. All right. Goodbye, everyone on YouTube. This month at postwrestlingcafe.com, go XL and you get live editions of Rewind to Raw, Rewind to Dynamite, and Rewind to SmackDown, featuring all the news of the day, your questions and answers, as well as feedback. Postwrestlingcafe.com. $6 gets you in the door.